Penguin Random House Audio presents The Language of Sycamores by Lisa Wingate. Read for you by Aaron Spencer. To my teachers and all teachers who build dreams by creating the dreamers, especially for Mrs. Crackart, my first grade teacher at Peasley School, who told me I would become a writer one day. Chapter 1. Life is like the poster on the wall of the doctor's office, one of those inspirational quotes framed in misty pink flowers. There are years that ask questions and years that answer. Zora Neale Hurston. It's not easy to be so profound when life actually starts asking questions you can't answer. Not just one or two narrow questions, but a barrage of broad, complex, open-ended questions. A flood, my Grandma Rose would have called it. Sometimes life goes by in a trickle, and sometimes life goes by in a flood, she used to say. It's in those rainy seasons you find out how well you can swim. When she said that, I had no idea what she meant. I never listened much to Grandma Rose. She had an old-fashioned, Bible-thumping, show-me state Baptist lecture on every subject, and she wasn't shy about dealing them out. I was busy, confident, on top of the world, a modern woman. I didn't have time to listen to what she was trying to tell me. My life was all about things I could program and control. Microprocessors and LAN networks and wireless links that move at the speed of light. I had no experience with realities that couldn't be controlled through data switches and efficiently written code. I knew nothing about surviving a flood because I'd never been in one. I was safely entrenched, or in a rut. It depended on how you looked at it. The problem with ruts is that when it starts to rain, they flood easily. Things were, all in all, pretty good in my particular rut. Even with the trauma of September 11th and the fact that my husband was an airline pilot, we were fairly content. I had a good career, he had a good career. We had sufficient income for what we wanted. We had friends and activities, and after a few years of living out in California, we were back in Boston, where I grew up and where we met 16 years ago on an incoming flight. We'd settled into a trendy converted loft in the old leather district, the place to be, if you knew Boston well enough to get past the tourist hype. Sometimes we both ended up there on the weekend, together. The day I read that quote from Zora Neale Hurston was the day everything changed. I was staring at the misty floral poster in Dr. Connor's office when he told me that my second set of tests hadn't come back normal. I didn't hear him at first. I was thinking that I needed to get back to the Lansing building for the 2 o'clock management meeting about the newest round of layoffs. If Dr. Connor didn't hurry up, I'd be late. Why didn't doctors realize that everyone else's time was just as valuable as theirs?
It could be cancer again, Karen, he said.
That one word sliced through my consciousness with the silent swish of an arrow, bisecting everything I was thinking. Cancer. It could be cancer again, Karen. My mind rushed back 8 years to the first time a doctor told me that, back to the day I miscarried the tiny baby that was growing inside me, and the doctor, during the D&C that followed, seemed concerned about more than just the miscarriage. He said the same thing then. It could be cancer. And it was. A lab test confirmed it. Surgery removed the spots, and a partial hysterectomy took away the chance of ever having children, but it couldn't remove the guilt. It was my own fault for convincing myself that since James and I weren't at the point of planning any children, I could skip the dreaded annual visit to the gynecologist. Eventually, I'd skipped for so many years that I was afraid to go back. Even after I knew I was accidentally pregnant following our romantic 7th anniversary trip to Fiji, I put off going to the doctor for a week, two, three, until 10 weeks into the pregnancy, I started cramping and spotting, and I knew something was very wrong.
Now here we sat again, me with my stomach full of the old fear, and Dr. Connor wearing a regretful but business-like mask. Karen? I realized he was talking to me.
What?
What? I heard myself say. All I could do was stare at the pink poster on the wall.
Don't start worrying yet. The biopsy is just a precaution, because the lab detected some inflamed cells on your slide. 75% of uterine cancer reoccurrences happen within the first 3 years, and you've been cancer-free for 8 years now. Odds are the tissue sample will come back negative, but we need to go ahead with the biopsy, just to be certain.
Today? I muttered. I have to go to a management meeting. The company's doing a new round of layoffs today. I have to be there to tell my people.
No, not today, but let's schedule it soon.
Sure, I said, standing up and reaching for my purse on the chair, feeling my fingers close numbly over the handle. I'll schedule it on my way out. Dr. Connor patted my shoulder, ushering me through the door.
Good. No point spending time wondering and worrying. Let's just do the test, and that'll put the question behind us.
There are years that ask questions. Years. All right. I started down the hall, and I could feel Dr. Connor eyeing me. Slowing as I came near the reception desk, I watched the doctor slip into another exam room. When he was gone, I kept walking, past the desk, through the waiting room door, past the pregnant ladies in the uncomfortable chairs, through the plate glass exit, across the marble lobby where my heels echoed against the silence, and onto the Boston street. I stood there gulping air, leaning against the cool exterior of the building, feeling like I wanted to kick off my shoes and run somewhere. This is stupid, Karen, I told myself. You're overreacting because it's already a stressful day, because you're torqued up about the layoffs in the meeting. That's all. This test is nothing. It's nothing. It's routine, just to prove there isn't anything wrong. Closing my eyes, I took in a deep breath and let it out slowly, willing away the rush of blood in my ears, the blaring of car horns, the rumble of the subway passing somewhere underneath. I wished the day were over. I wished we were already through the meeting, where we would be given the layoff list, and through the inevitable aftermath of going from cubicle to cubicle, quietly delivering bad news to the unlucky, telling them how sorry we were, promising letters of reference and handing out severance packages, as if that could make up for the loss of a job you'd put your heart into. God, I hate this, I muttered, even though the situation at Lansing Technology had nothing to do with God, and everything to do with corporate higher-ups who spent too much, forged earnings reports too often, overextended credit, lined their pockets, and were desperate to save their own six-figure jobs. This is so wrong. Everything about this day felt wrong.
I know.
A voice echoed faintly against the doorway, breaking through the cacophony, and I jerked away from the wall, opening my eyes. A bag lady was standing there watching me, her silver hair tied in a faded pink scarf like a fortune teller's. Her eyes were blue and cloudy, folded like two small crystal balls among the dusky wrinkles of her face. She tapped her fingers against the handle of her shopping cart, pointing expectantly to her bucket of flowers. I assumed she was selling them. I'm sorry, I said when she just stood there. I'm not interested today. Reaching into her bucket, she pulled out a rose, pink like her scarf, and tried to hand it to me. I waved her off, repeating, I'm not interested. I don't need one. I don't have any change today. Frowning, she moved her lips like she was chewing on a thought. For just an instant, she reminded me of Grandma Rose when she knew I was tuning out one of her lectures. I felt a pinch of conscience that said I should take the flower and hand the bag lady a few dollars. I checked my purse. Nothing but fives, tens, and twenties. I'm sorry. All I have is a... When I looked up, she was gone, disappearing down the street, probably headed toward Faneuil Hall, where the street preachers and the beggars and the pigeons hung out during the day,
competing for tourist dollars and handouts from the lunch crowd.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?